All right. Hopefully I've gotten a little bit of control brought back here to the show. Like I said, I apologize. I just literally been one of those days, got in the door like 5 minutes before the show started. So nothing like being totally unprepared, right? So we've got Miss Tep, our host. You with me?
I'm here this evening, and actually, I got into the PRN room, so it's going to work
out.
You
know, I've gotten 4 or 5 messages just recently, including our guest, that says that they're having trouble. They're not able to actually get into the chat room, and some of them are saying, like Gary says, he's tried like 2 or 3 different browsers, so I'm not sure really what's going on there. But anyway, we're being joined briefly tonight here with Gary Hunt. Gary, how you doing, brother?
Oh, excellent.
Just fine. And how are you all doing? I know how you're doing, Mike. Yeah.
I'm like a one-armed man trying to hang wallpaper right now. But anyway, we've invited Gary Hunt here tonight. For those of you who don't know, is it Outpost of Freedom or For Freedom? Well, I forgot.
Outpost of Freedom.
Outpost of Freedom website. Excellent blog. I don't even know how to describe Gary. He's a journalist. He's a patriot. You know, he's an organizer. He does everything. But very good friend of us and Watchmen of America for many years now. He's been involved nationally, and I've been involved with him in the past as well. Trying to make headway in this country in reestablishing a Committees of Safety. And for those of you who don't know what that is, that's why I felt it was important to get Gary on the show tonight, because there's a big conference event getting ready to take place, and I invited him to tell us about that, what it is and how you can participate, but also to explain to people, you know, what the Committees of Safety is and why it's important. So, Gary, I'll give the floor over to you for a bit.
Well, a very brief history of Committees of Safety and our English heritage. Oliver Cromwell in the 1500s challenged the royal authority, and to create the militias, he created Committees of Safety, because the English, since the Magna Carta, the military will always be subordinate to the civil authority. That's something that's held in this country throughout our history. And so he created the Committees of Safety and then created the militias, and they fought the royal people and eventually cut, I think, Charles II's head off. In this country in 1592, there was a governor in New England that was unpopular. He was raising rents on people and everything. It was royal land then, so he was raising rents on everybody without the consent of the parliament or the people. And so the militia, which was subordinate to the governor, formed a committee of safety, and then got the committee of safety to authorize them to arrest the governor, and the governor was arrested and put in jail until he was put on a ship back to England. During the expansion, especially in New York and Pennsylvania in the Western Territories, the Committees of Safety, since the government could not provide protection for the expansion of the settlers, there was no means to provide it. The local, in fact, my family, when I look at genealogy in Western Pennsylvania, Susquehanna River Valley, the Committees of Safety built stockades. And when the Indians attacked, everybody went in the stockades. When I say my family, a couple were getting married. They'd gone to visit some other people. There was an Indian raid. The wedding was scheduled in one town, and they ended up being quite a ways away and ended up getting married on time, but everybody else was back where they were supposed to get married. But then they really came into play after the Stamp Act. They were the form of communication that had been established by Sam Adams, the Committee of Correspondence. They were the depositories for the information or sources of information that was taken out through writers to the various committees of safety, and then the information was disseminated in those communities. April 12, 1775, John Hancock was chairman of the Provincial Committee of Safety in Massachusetts, and this is 1 week exactly before Lexington and Concord. He put out a flyer, and it's on the Committee of Safety page. The page is committee, committee.org. And right on the front page, you'll see the flyer that was put out requesting that all the communities and plantations and everybody establish committees of safety. Now, the committees of safety during the siege of Boston would herd cattle and sheep and bring loads of firewood and blankets and clothing to Boston because nothing was coming in by sea. The Boston Port Bill didn't allow anything to be brought in by sea to Boston unless it was by, who was it, Gage at the time, I think. So they were bringing it down through the Boston Neck and bringing food and firewood and clothing into the people that remained in Boston during the embargo of Boston, not the siege. The siege was later. The committees of safety were the civil authority that provided for and commissioned the officers in the militia. There's an excellent book, fairly recent, I think last year or the year before, called The Minutemen by John Galvin. And he talks in that about the committees of safety and the militia that went to Concord after the battle at Lexington. And one of the committees even took them 7 hours to find a member of the Committee of Safety to give them permission to leave their county before they could go to Boston, or go to Concord, and Battle Road and shoot at the Redcoats. So they played a role in the formation of this country. Another role that they played is probably the most significant, and we probably wouldn't be the United States of America today had it not been for committees of safety. The First Continental Congress was called by the Committees of Safety. The Second Continental Congress was called by the Committees of Safety. By the Second Continental Congress, and with events that were happening, the Olive Branch Petition and all this, it became self-perpetuating, but the source of the delegates was always the state committees of safety, not the local ones, but the provincial or state committees of safety. So its role in a peaceful transition from British government to the Continental Congress, the Articles of Confederation, and ultimately the Constitution was a smooth transition because committees of safety existed. They are the true will of the people. So that's brief history.
Let me ask you this, because you said earlier, you said the civil authority is always over the military. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I've been told that the highest civil authority isn't really the governor, it's the sheriff in every area.
Well, I hear that a lot, but I can't. They call them constitutional sheriffs, and the constitutions I've looked at do nothing more than create. Yeah, they did do nothing. Some constitutions create the office of sheriff, some it's created statutorily.
The ones
where it's created constitutionally, all they say is every county will have a sheriff.
But
in reading old history books, the coroner most often was the highest authority within the county, but the governor was always the highest authority in the state. But if we had a militia in a community, in a town, there's no sheriff for a town. You know, the Committee of Safety, and this is what happened in Western Massachusetts. The Committee of Safety, Worcester, Massachusetts, for example, in 1774, March of 1774, declared independence. This is over a year before the Lexington and Concord, declared independence from England, and they recreated the majority of the people were patriotic or Whigs. They created a new government. They fired all the judges. They forced the judges to resign at gunpoint. They abandoned the militia, then remustered the militia, not allowing any Tories to join the militia. So that was not a county. That was a town of Worcester, Massachusetts. So there are different levels. And, I don't want to get in a debate over constitutional sheriffs. I just have trouble understanding what they're saying. The people have the right to elect their own leaders. Whether it be in the militia, the leaders in the militia were elected by the members. Same thing within the community. Albany, New York. I've got the minutes from 1775 to 1781. The entire minutes. It's 1,800 pages published in 1906 of the minutes. And every year they're electing new officers. They're not the constitutional government, but they were created under the concept that we've had in English heritage going back to the Magna Carta, the time of Cromwell and all that, that the people have a right to create their own government. And so in the absence of the government doing what it was supposed to do under what's referred to as the English Constitution, it wasn't written like ours. Ours was the first written constitution. But they took that heritage and applied it. We're going to elect our own leaders, and they became then... They displaced the other government. They became not a shadow government, but a parallel government, where if they were sufficient in size, they actually ruled that community. They were the masters of that community, and they were not elected by or appointed by the king or anything else. They got rid of all the royal people as they established committees for safety.
So this was what became the committees of safety then.
Right. Now, when you talk about sheriffs, remember almost every sheriff in the country is getting federal money, so he's bound by contract to the Department of Justice.
Whether
he's elected or not.
A lot to it, yeah. Well, I had just heard of that, so since we were talking about it, you know, and you mentioned the highest civil authority, I thought of that question because I wanted to...
Well, it's not the highest. Now, understand the structure. The provincial committees of safety, Massachusetts was the first one to have a provincial committee of state safety, or say a statewide committee of safety. They had called for the towns and plantations to create committees of safety. Now, from a realistic standpoint, within a county, you've got various towns. They create committees of safety. Then they come together at the county level and create a county of committee of safety, because we find reference to county committees. So the delegates from the city committees are selected and go to the county committee. Now the county committee then selects delegates to go to the state committee. So it's similar to the structure of government that we were supposed to have in this country, where it actually works from the bottom to the top instead of from the top to the bottom, what we're getting into now in this country. So there are different tiers of committee of safety.
Right.
So there's not a highest one. The highest one is the state. The highest one would actually be the Continental Congress.
Yeah.
But then they don't have authority within the states. They have to go back down the same tier to the state to get the state to do something. For example, when Washington needed troops, he would go to Congress, and if they couldn't get enough people to enlist in the Continental Army, they would send requisitions to the various states. And if the state had the availability and didn't have any problems, then they would meet the requisitions and send them to join Washington's army for whatever was going on at the time.
So in our history, the committees of safety was a part of that transition from British rule to wind up being what we now know as the Republic government under the Constitution. But during that early stage, they were the ones... The committees of safety were responsible for calling the first Continental Congress, which wound up resulting in our Constitution and the country as we know it. Is that correct?
Right. Yes.
Right. So, you know, you've got this event, and we've had you on the show many times speaking in the past about the committees of safety, and it seems like there's been a great deal of effort to try to reestablish that. You know, I guess none of us, maybe you do, understand, you know, what has happened to the Committee of Safety. How come we don't have one today? But more importantly, why should we today, people get involved in this? What is this upcoming conference all about?
Well, back in 93 and 94, I started studying the Committee of Safety. I was in Orlando and was reading some history books and read about committees of safety, and I ran across a set of Annals of America down for $40 down at a used bookstore. And I bought them, and I started studying more, and I kept wanting to learn more and more about it. In late 94, early 95, we started a committee of safety in Orlando, Florida, Central Florida Committee of Safety, and I was spending a lot of time in South Bend, Indiana, and Dave Leeper up there started a committee of safety up there, and through fax networking, we got some other people around the country to establish committees of safety. But then after the Oklahoma City bombing, there was a death in the Patriot community. Militias disbanded, just, you know, everything fell apart. So nothing's really has happened since then, except I've continued to study committees of safety whenever I run across references to it. But the idea is coming along. There are a lot of militias realize that they have to, they're subordinate to the governor of the state, or because there's nobody in a county level that is really, you know, you could say the Board of County Commissioners or the supervisors or whatever the equivalent is, but there's no real structure that they can subordinate to, except perhaps the governor, because the state constitutions recognize militia. Every state constitution recognizes militia, and you'll in the statutes that you'll see that the subordination, the governor's in control of them. Whether it's the National Guard, the reserves, or the militia, the unorganized militia, they have redefined the rest of us. But they've made us all militia, 18 to 45 roughly, just male or male and female in some states. But the militia still exists because of the constitutions, but the governor won't take any responsibility for being the civil authority over it. So, hey, why can't we do what our forefathers did and create our own committees of safety to subordinate? And a lot of the militias that I've spoken with recognize but are chagrined by it. And the question arose on the Bundy Ranch, well, where's the civil authority? Well, their militia, they volunteered to go there, and there was no civil authority there except the liaison between Cliven Bundy and the militia, and that was Ryan Payne during that event.
Craig,
in a sense, there was the civil authority.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but like the sheriff who could have filled that role, he neither, I mean, he didn't get involved more or less. I mean, he wasn't taking part in the insurrection against the Bundys, but he wasn't supporting the militia there either. I mean, it's like he was sitting on the fence. Is that right?
He pretty much sat on the fence, yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, like during Waco, the federal government deputized the Waco Police Department, McClendon County Sheriff's Department, Texas State Police, and the Texas Rangers. And I don't know if they – I don't think they deputized Gillespie, but he – is not in office anymore. The new sheriff's in now, and I don't know how much what happened to the Bundy Ranch came into play, but he professed to be simply trying to deal with any problems that arose. So he was kind of a hands-off. He wasn't on either side. He was trying to stay in the middle. However, after it was over, he went along with, we've got to find bring criminal charges against these guys if they committed crimes by having guns in Nevada.
Right, you know? Right. There you go.
So he was
so
kind of favored the federal side, but he did not participate on either side.
So he kind of showed it there at the end then. So
he showed his colors, yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of this committees of safety, And there's a new event or activity that's come up. I received notice today, and I've got the link here. I can post it in. Let me get it posted in the chat room.
I got it for you.
It's committee. Yeah, there you go. Ms. Tepp's got it posted in there. And tell us what this conference call is, who's invited, and how can they participate. What's it all about?
Well, a little background to that is, you know, I've been studying committees of safety for about 21 years now, and I got some started back in the mid-90s, but I've been trying to pass that head on to other people. There's a guy down in Texas, Boyd White, that's been very active in trying to get committees going down there, but there's another guy, Wolf Williams, who's goes by MP Patriot, Montana Patriot, up in Montana, and he's really excited about it. And he's the one that's sponsoring this event, and he's asked, I'll be a guest on the show tomorrow, and we'll be going through covering a lot of things about the committees of safety. He's got a pretty good outline laid out. But the idea is to give people a little more understanding of committees of safety so that they can decide if they're going to start one in their community, if they want to start one. And if we go back to that flyer from April 12, 1775, I think it suggested that three people could start a committee of safety in a community, which is kind of interesting. I guess we can follow the historical role safely, can't we?
Right.
So but it's going to be simulcast on Republic Network News, Sister Thunder Radio, 42action.org, and FPRN Radio. They're listed there, so you can listen. And then there's two. There's one. Let's see. Republic Network News is a conference call, and we've got another conference call set up for it. So there's two numbers for conference calls that people would be able to participate either through conference calls or listening. And if they go to committee.org, there's a live chat button where you can participate in the chat if you don't want to get on the conference call. We'll be taking questions from the chat and the conference calls both. The others are one-way feeds. The radio systems are one-way feeds. But the idea is other people have joined in because they're beginning to understand that if we want our country back, it's not going to come by picking one of two of 320 million people to be president or even your senator or representative. You get a choice of these two idiots. You know, I mean, my way of defining it, everybody says a lesser of two evils. I think they got it wrong. The Republicans dangle a turd on the string and the Democrats dangle a turd on the string, and you get a choice. But when you're done, what do you get? You get a turd dangling on a string. So,
somebody asked me the other day, they said if Jeb Bush runs for president and Hillary Clinton runs for president on ticket, which country are you going to move to? So that's about the size of it. You get a choice between these two turds, you know.
and that's it. You know, we've lost the process because it's controlled by the political parties, and we think that we have a role in the political parties. Ask Ron Paul about that last round.
Yeah, exactly.
Where he was barred from the conventions.
Yeah.
And, and we don't know who's the power behind the political parties. We have a figurehead in each party, but we don't know who the power is. You know, is it George Soros or who is it? Somebody there has enough money to have a phenomenal influence on what happens.
Yeah, no kidding.
And we don't even know who
that's
the son of a bitch is.
Don't know who he is.
Not even a clue? No one has a clue on who this person
it's
is?
It's rumored that there's an organization called the Committee of 300, and it's rumored that those are the power players from all over the world that you know, it's like those evil James Bond movies where you got that faceless villain that wants to control the world, and there's supposedly some committee of those. But we've heard so many different conspiracy theories and things about that. Some people call it the Bilderbergs are behind it. Some say, you know, the Rockefellers are behind it. But, I mean, the bottom line is we have lost control of our republic, and it's in the hands of puppets that's all they are. Obama, to me, he's a puppet, you know. Everybody wants to make him out to be the Antichrist, but he's just a puppet, just like Bush was, and so many others before them. So, yeah, Gary's right. You know, who's really the dark shadow or the wizard behind the curtain pulling all the knobs and stuff? You know, that'd be interesting to know for a fact. But our biggest problem right now is, how do we gain anything that's remotely considered control back of our freedoms and our liberties and get this government back in check? There's supposed to be a government for the people, by the people, not over the people.
Remember back then, it was first the Parliament was the bad guy, and after the Declaration of Independence, then they'd say bad things about the king. But until the Declaration of Independence, they blamed everything on Parliament. Who cares who the bad guy is? We've got to displace them, period. That's all there is to it. I don't care who it is.
Exactly.
You know, why should we waste our time on it? What we need to do is displace government just like they did back then and recreate a constitutional government with safeguards to protect our future, which is defined in the first paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. When it becomes despotic, it is our right, our
duty
replace that government with one more beneficial to the ends that we seek. And that's exactly what we need to do.
Yeah.
Now, Mike, I think you read the plan for restoration of constitutional government. You noticed in there that the committees of safety are fundamental to it.
Right.
Because
correct.
It's modeled after what happened 230 years ago.
Exactly. Now, the committees of safety, this is not some like one great big cover-all blanket. It's something that has to be done on the front lines in every community out there to make it effective. Is that right?
Yes, that's the way it happened then, and that's the way it needs to happen now. We community at a time, and when you get enough in a community, you can form a county committee of safety. And say when you have three county committees of safety, you can form a state committee of safety.
Right.
But yes, it's bottom up. That's the way government should be in this country.
Exactly.
Red Beckman used to use a triangle to describe government. He said the president's at the top and the people are at the bottom, and the people that work for the federal government are the top third, and then the state government, and then down below that is all of us working peons that support this government that spends money like there is no tomorrow. I mean, right now our debt, you can't tell how many generations that debt goes to because we're not paying it down. We're just paying the interest off. It's perpetual debt. Red said our intention, and I think he's right, is turn that triangle over. The president works for all of us. We are the top of it. When we take a job with government, we move down that triangle towards the bottom.
Yep.
Everybody that works for government is working their way down. They're employees of ours, and it needs to go back to that form.
It's interesting that you should say that because that's the exact premise of upon which our Watchman Triangle logo was designed from, was the inverted pyramid that says the people are over the government, because it's always been defined that, you know, at the top of the pyramid is the elite and the government. And, you know, we don't believe that way. It's not the way it's meant to be. And so that's the reason why we use an inverted triangle with the wide part at the top and the point at the bottom for our watchman patch. That's what it represents. So there's a lot of deep meaning. It's kind of coincidental you brought that up. I'm enjoying that. So how do people, this conference call is going to take place, and I guess there's a show, and people can call in and listen, and then there'll be a period of time where they could, press some phone dial touchpad and ask questions or something. But how do they participate? They need to go to the website. And there's links or information there on the conference call phone number, I assume, and how they can get in there. Because most of those things have a PIN number, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They've got the PIN numbers on the conference call. The listed at the top is being run by some of the people that I work with. The Republic Network News is another call-in number, and they both have the code on them. And Republic News Network did not tell me what their code was, but
it's
5-star. You hit 5-star, and that raises your hand. And then the questions will be taken in order, one at a time. Everybody will be muted, but then by the last 4 phone digits, because most of them just show you the phone numbers. Say 8438 is, do you have a question? You know, that person will be brought up one at a time to keep it organized. The chat that I mentioned at committee.org, the live chat will be open, taking questions. The Sister Thunder Radio, the 42Action.org, and FPRN radio will be a listen-only type thing.
Okay, so they'll more or less be simulcasting, but all you can do
right.
there is listen. Okay.
Yeah, if you want to simulcast, we'll bring you in too.
I don't have a way to do it through Blog Talk because we've already got our show. You can only schedule one damn show a day through them. So, yeah. But
now apparently there's a YouTube link too, and I guess they're going to have that up as well.
Live,
down at
like
the
a
bottom.
Live? Yeah, okay.
It's supposed to be a YouTube Live. That's what I was told. I think Kilby Smith with that.
So for the
Republic
folks listening,
News Network or 42Action.org is supposed to arrange that feed.
So for the folks listening out there who may not see a chat room or see our links in there, let's spell it out for them. It's www.committee.org, but where do they go from there?
Then / Montana, all lowercase letters, M-O-N-T-A-N-A, / capital C, little o, capital S. That's the way we abbreviate Committee of Safety, - capital C for conference call, .htm. So it's committee.org / Montana, lowercase, then / capital C, little o, capital S, - capital C, dot htm.
All right. So, folks, there you have it. Get over there, and there will be links to the various different programs, radio shows, things that will be broadcasting the conference. And you can choose to actually call in and listen over a phone. There will be a couple of different actual conference numbers. One may or may not have the code on it, but there will be a PIN code. That is tomorrow night, if I'm mistaken. Is that right? The January 29th?
Tomorrow night, it'll be 6 o'clock Pacific, 7 Mountain, 8 Central, and 9 Eastern.
Okay. So there we have the times.
It's scheduled for 2 hours.
Okay. It's scheduled for 2 hours, unless it just goes absolutely crazy, right? I'm thinking there's going to be a lot of people there. I just got a feeling. And we're going to try to do everything we can to help make that happen.
Well, I appreciate that. With the number of organizations that have signed on already to simulcast it, I'd say the interest is there. And I'm glad that you're interested too, Mike. It's a pleasure to be back on your radio show and especially to announce that conference call.
Okay, we've got a question.
Gary,
go ahead,
Ms. Steph. I was going to say we have a question in the chat room from Indy Ranger. His question is on the Coalition of Safety. Who is the chairman of the committee? Is not the beginning of taking control just as it is now?
Well, when we started the Orlando and South Bend Committees of Safety, to explain this, I arranged for the library in Orlando, Florida, and we had a Committee of Safety meeting, and those that wanted to participate then were to meet somewhere, and I deferred. I did not want to be chairman. I wasn't planning on staying in Orlando, and they elected their chairman out of that first group of people that were there. South Bend, the same thing. Dave Leeper was setting it up, and he deferred to the committee to elect a chairman the first meeting. There is no Committee of Safety now. I'm an advocate of the Committee of Safety. I believe that it is necessary. But my duties now, I mean, you know, those of you that are on my mail list know that I've got my hands in a lot of things, and so I'm deferring. But when you create your local committee of safety, you have an election and an elected chairman. And then he's the chairman. Now, back then, they looked at short terms. Every year they reelected a chairman. But no, it's not. It's bottom up. It has to be. And so nobody that starts the committee is necessarily the chairman. He might be desirable because he's probably looked into it for more, but if you don't like him after a year, get rid of him. And I've written some bylaws for the Arizona Committees of Safety, both state and county level, that could be modified for anything, but I wrote them a few years ago when Arizona decided to try a state committee of safety and then bring in the counties, and it failed miserably because I was told that we're going to have five counties have county committees in no time. It never materialized. Not one county created a committee of safety, so it's got to work from the bottom up just like it did 200 years ago.
And the
structure then is, you know, there's no parties. Your number, everybody that's interested in chairman, or if you want to draft somebody, decide who you think can best suit the needs. If he doesn't work, get rid of him. Get somebody else.
And it has to work through participation. I mean, people just have to decide, you know, look, this is something worthwhile that I need to participate in. Nothing truly effective is ever going to happen in this country until people decide to, first of all, step up and do something, and second, get involved in something that makes a difference. And this is one of those things that it did work in our history. And it can work today as long as it's done according to a protocol, I would say, right?
Yes, but we've got to get back to what they understood back then. It's a participatory government. It's not led by leaders.
Right. All right.
The government is to govern the government, not the people. But government has begun to not govern itself, but govern the people. The concept of committee of safety is that the level that inverted triangle again. Their job is to keep their house in order. They shouldn't be passing laws that they do. The Constitution doesn't give them the authority. The state constitution doesn't give the authority in most cases for a lot of the state and local laws.
Exactly.
So it's got to be participatory, and I don't mean by going down every November and electing. There have to be people in the community that are so concerned about the direction of government that first we've got to establish the model, and second we've got to make it habitual. We've got in the habit of letting them lead us.
Exactly. I agree with you 100%. Now, Gary, tell everybody how they can find you, because you have a website. It's Outpost of Freedom. And you've got all of your journalistic works over there and a tremendous amount of work that you do all the time. So tell folks how they can meet up with you and your blogs and your website.
Okay, outpost-of-freedom.com. Outpost-of-freedom.com. When you get to that page, right at the top, many of my larger recent articles are listed there. There's a link to OPF mail list if you want to get on it. Whenever I write an article, it's distributed through a mail list. There's a link there also to the blog. Now, most of my recent writings are only on the blog. Back in 2009, it was just a lot more convenient to run it in a blog format. So I left all my old stuff up on the .com page, and the /blog page is where most of my new stuff is. Now, as far as how long I've been doing this, on the main page, if you scroll down, you'll see paragraphs describing what's in each of the different parts, but you'll find one that's Waco White Papers. I started my journalistic career in February of 1993, about 2 weeks before what happened in Waco began. I went to Waco on March 5th and didn't leave until April 23rd. And I reported out via fax network then daily from about what was happening in Waco. And those have been posted there by the day as they occurred, what was going on in Waco at the time. They were short. They had to be, because fax network, I was limited to one page, basically, because Ken Varden was faxing out 800 faxes overnight on two machines. And then those were going out. And I run into people now that remember reading those back 22 years ago. But yep. That's how it started out, and I've been almost continually writing. There had been hiatuses when I was working, and there wasn't much going on. But back in 2006, 2007, when the economic crisis began, I began writing much more frequently, and I've been continuing to do so.
Absolutely, and if you do get a chance, folks, get over there and check out all of Gary's writings of his experience and as things went down at Waco. If you're not familiar with it, you'll get a hell of a lot better understanding of what really, really took place there. And we had Gary on, it's been, what, 3 or 4 years ago. We did a 2-hour special on Waco, and it's I've learned things I wouldn't even imagine that took place. It really took place from people that were on the ground at the scene, and it just keeps, you know, the rabbit hole just keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper since more people have come forward and evidence and things like that. But it's just an absolute terrible tragedy. Get over there and check that out. Gary does a lot of journalistic work within the Patriot community. And one of the hardest endeavors we have right now, and I don't know if Gary will agree with me, but it's weeding out the bad patriots, because there's a hell of a lot of them out there. Yeah,
well,
that's a whole show by itself, isn't it, Gary?
That would. After the Bundy Ranch. Bundy Ranch was an interesting turning point because, well, let's see, back earlier last year, I think it was, when they moved the barricades and took them to the White House, I wrote an article, Resistance Has Begun, because for the first time they're doing something instead of waving signs. However, in April 12th of last year, we went from civil disobedience to civil defiance. What's the difference between the two? Civil disobedience, you might get your head cracked, you might get arrested. Civil defiance, you might get killed, and they might get killed. It was guns against guns on April 12th. That was a turning point. And I waited 22 years for that to happen. And now the next event is the flashpoint, something similar to April 19th, 1775. So we have turned a corner. Now, in that entire period, I never badmouthed any patriots except Linda Thompson because she kept ragging me on her radio and her faxes and everything. So I struck back. Bill Cooper called me John Doe 4. And, you know, thousands of people picked that up. But when Bill Cooper died, I wrote what some people considered a nice tribute to Bill Cooper. He did a lot of good for the patriot community, and I left out my feelings about him personally. But after April 12th, things began to change, and I had thought about it before this Kessler thing came up, but, you know, I talked with Kessler, looked into his background and everything, and wrote a four-part piece on Kessler, the turncoat, the infiltrator, but I was also at the time considering doing a series on questionable patriots, and so the first one that was done was a guy named Christopher Nathaniel Blystone. He's very well known in Texas. He's been up at Operation American Spring. And we looked into both his military and his criminal record. He's on a plea agreement right now. He's lied his ass off about his military career. He claims he was in the rescue of Luttrell when he was shot down. Hell, and on his webpage, he talks about his mentors, and they were guys that died 2 years before he went in the Army. But they were his mentors, I guess. Who was the one in the White House that said, you know, the spirits talk to me? So I guess the spirits were talking to him, but we've got more in line on that, and it's going to continue, and it's called Questionable Characters. And the first one is up. We're working on the second, third, and fourth ones right now. We're looking very deeply into people's backgrounds to expose it.
I got a feeling you're going to be real, real busy, Gary.
Well,
I was
going
to kind of say the same thing.
you and I have been around long enough to know that that list is getting a lot bigger every time we turn around. You know?
Well, I've got to admit the list, you know, we can't, there's things we have no access to. But if somebody's got a criminal record, felonies, and they just seem to walk away from that, or they lie about their military background, those are the ones that can be tied down. If you read the one on Blystone, it's all facts. We've proven it.
Right.
Anything that was conjecture, we left out.
Yes, absolutely.
And that, but if you've got some names that you want to put on the list, all you have to do is email me, and there's an email link at the bottom of all my main pages.
Well,
or Mike has my email address. But what I need to know is their full name, what web pages they have, Facebook and otherwise, their date of birth, and where they live. And that's what we need to get started investigating. And I've got a team of people that are loaded down right now.
I've said it, been saying it for years. There's an element out there in the patriot community that needs to be more or less, for lack of any better description, blackballed. Everybody needs to know who they are, and they need to steer clear of them because they're not what they claim they are, or they are, in fact, by their own actions very detrimental to the patriot community, whether they're working with other agencies, federal or not, or whether they're working out of their own agenda. They still exist, and you know there's never been a more or less a clearinghouse of things to identify those people for so that everybody could like a wanted poster sign in a post office and say, you know, look, there's that asshole. That's that one everybody's look out for. But you know, you did have a refresh my memory, a patriot court system where if you had been done wrongly by one of these people, you could file charges against them, and you would give them an opportunity to reply to those charges, and then it went before some sort of patriot court system.
Well,
explain that for me.
first a complaint was filed by some, I'm going to use one. One person won't mind my using her name, even though she is a questionable character in a lot of people's minds. And the other one I don't care about. That's Rick Light. So Deborah Swan filed a complaint against Rick Light. And she provided a lot of information, audio recordings, her talking to Light, her talking to the FBI, her talking to various people. And she dumped all this stuff on us. Now, we have the first step is grand jury. And the grand jury doesn't come back with innocence or guilt. It comes up with probable cause, unlike the National Liberty Alliance, where they want to convict people with a grand jury, which is not the way our judicial system is supposed to work. But she dumped all this stuff on us. And so the grand jury was impaneled. They're anonymous. They went over all this stuff. They threw a lot of it out. But then they looked at the ones that had solid proof of certain things, and they came up with a number of charges against Rick Light on that. And that went into the form of an indictment. That indictment was sent to Rick Light. He was given the opportunity, if he wanted to challenge it, to go to the jury, petite jury trial, where both sides are heard, which, again, is our judicial system, as it was intended. And we had set up a forum. In fact, if you go to Committee of Safety, you'll see a tab for common law, committee.org, you'll see a tab for the common law court, and you can read more about it. But the indictment was sent to Rick Light, and then he turned around and threatened to sue everybody on the grand jury. So I put it back to the grand jury, and they decided to add one more charge against him, attempting to intimidate a grand jury. So that was added onto the indictment, and since he didn't want to go to jury trial, it was published as an unanswered indictment.
Right.
And people that have read it have, that were close to Rick Light, have abandoned him. They want nothing to do with him anymore. But it was very thoroughly done. It wasn't based on conjecture or
it's
rumors or anything.
It's based on facts. Factual evidence. That's the way it has to be done. And that's what I like about Gary Hunt. Gary, you know, he's like me, you know. You don't have to like us, you know, but there's one thing about it. We're only going to give you the truth, you know, and the facts of the situation without any personal conjecture involved. And if you can accept the facts and take it logically, then you'll gain from it. You know, some people can read that kind of stuff and still be in a state of denial. I've never understood it, but if you ever get a chance, you know, check out that common law court system, which I really thought would be great for the Patriot community, because it would help to identify and indict all these asshole Patriots out there that want to destroy the Patriot community, and we could let it be known who they are, what they've done, in a factual type of environment, and then it's up to the people to choose. You know, are these people really patriots? Or, you know, based on the facts of the evidence, one could only conclude no. Well, if they have actually done these things to other patriots and other people and other organizations, then we need to steer clear of them. We need to ostracize them from our community. That's just the way I feel about it.
Let me explain.
I'm not trying to speak for Gary Hunt. You know.
Well, you're right, and that's why the common law court was set up, because I wasn't looking at going after patriots like I am with questionable characters based on their background. The questionable characters is a background. Here's their background, and it says right at the bottom, you decide whether you want to associate with these people, whether you want to trust them or not. It doesn't come to a conclusion. It just lays out the facts. Now, the common law court, there was another one, Randy Mack. A lot of people know who Randy is. And Jim Stachowiak, he went by some other name, Freedom Fighter or something like that. And this was based on accusations. So this gets more on the personal level at the common law court. Excuse me, defamation, slander, libel, things like that. In fact, some newspaper out of Washington had one filed by a guy named Morrison against them. And they found that this newspaper screwed the guy out of $10,000. But if it's a personal matter, dispute between parties, the Committee of Safety Common Law Court can handle that kind, even though the questionable characters can't. So it is a solution, and we need to start looking at that. We need to weed out these people that are disruptive and detrimental to the Patriot community and keeping us from working together.
Well, I agree with you there, brother. And like I said, it's all about, you know, people that work hard to set these things up, get these types of organizations or activities working, and then it you know, it's like we can only build it or provide it. It takes the people to step forward and participate and use the tools that we're able to give you. It's what it's always been about, and it's what it'll be about until we get something progressive that will help us get closer to resolving the problems that this country faces. And until people get off their ass and participate and decide that, you know, look, I need to do something, and here's something I, you know, need to get involved in. This is not a part-time bass club. This is the saving of our country, for God's sake. So people you got to step up with a deepest level of commitment and dedication, and we just need more of it right now at this point, in my opinion.
Yep, but until we work, we can, as long as we spend our time fighting amongst each other, we will not take on the more difficult task of fighting our enemy.
Yeah, that's one of the oldest tactics in the book. Keep us at each other's throat, total distraction, you know. Well, hey, Gary, brother, I deeply appreciate you taking the time out, especially on short notice, to come be on our show and tell us about this Committees of Safety Conference meeting. Certainly appreciate you sharing that with us, and hopefully we've got the word out. I know we've got a lot of people listening to the show tonight, so hopefully we've succeeded in helping get that going in that direction. And for the one last time, tell the people when and where and what time and how they can get there.
You'll go to committee.org/lowercase Montana/capital C capital S-capital C capital C.htm. HTM is lowercase. And that has all the information about the different ways of accessing the conference call, just listening, participating, or chatting. And it is going to be tomorrow, Thursday evening, 6 o'clock Pacific, 7 Mountain, 8 Eastern, or 8 Central, and 9 Eastern. And we're set up to take as many people as want to participate, either listen or participate by asking questions.
Right. So there's a conference call feature that they can call in and actually be able to, I guess, punch a code in, raise their hand, and ask questions, things of that nature.
Right.
Or there's several different ways. They can log into various links or radio shows and just listen in if they want to. So,
right.
Any final words there, Gary?
We passed the turning point last April 12th. Now we need to continue working as proficiently as possible towards restoration of constitutional government in this country. And please help me get it done in my lifetime. I'm getting old, but I want to see it accomplished.
Thank you both.
Well, Gary, I want to thank you. It's been an honor. I've never had the pleasure of actually being on the show with you. I've listened in on many occasions. But the knowledge is phenomenal. Thank you so much.
Well, without Mike and you to host me on the show, I would be spinning my wheels. So thank you as well for helping getting the word out.
Our
right,
pleasure.
Brother.
We'll make sure it gets out there.
And I'll try to make it to that call, and I encourage everyone else, if they can, to be there, listen in, learn about what the Committees of Safety is, learn why it's important for all of us right now, and also I'm sure we're going to learn a lot of ideas on how to implement and reestablish those Committees of Safety tomorrow night, January 29th, committee.org. Get over there and check it out. Thank you, Gary, and we appreciate
your
time you spent with us tonight.
Okay.
All right, folks.
Good night.
We'll be right back right after this music break.